Do you want to feel happier? Do you want to feel more radiant and more alive? To go beyond alive and to feel truly like you are thriving? That's what I'm here for. Helping you find that best you that you know is in there. It is. And you can start accessing that you today. It's possible. If you're ready for a shortcut to just that, let's work together. Reach out and let's work one-on-one to transform you and your life into happy, into thriving. Reach out to me and book a quick call. It's in the show notes, and let's get you there. Are you really committed and ready? Let's do it. I'm the happiest I've ever been thanks to all the practices I've made a part of my life. You can be too. It's here for you. You can also access my course, The Youthfulness Hack, which is all about feeling good and getting radiant and all the things I do concentrated in one spot. Go there today and use code AMY15 for 15% off right now, only for listeners of this show. And if you are ready to truly have accountability and live happy, book a call with me today. The world needs your best. Commit and show up. Let's do this. Same with me. I just look completely different.
I decided this morning, I was like, I woke up and I did this half hour meditation and this quantum stuff. And I was like, okay, I just didn't feel great this morning. And so I did that and that was all fine. And then out of nowhere, I just got this, okay, fuck this. It's been 45 years of worrying about bullshit. And this just came in and I went, that's it. It ends today as I enter my 45th year. No more.
I love it. You know what? I
did. No more.
I did. Let's just be started here because I want to talk about that. Me too. Yeah. Me too. So welcome, Allison Canavan. Yes. Transformation speaker and coach. I'm so excited to connect with you today. So yay, everyone, welcome to the show. And we are jumping right in. So thank you for being here today. I did the same thing. Like on my 50th birthday, the night before, I sat there and I'm so tired of feeling bad or tired of bringing myself down from negative thoughts and stuff. So I wrote myself vows and I literally read through them every day. I put them on social media, but I wrote myself vows that I'm going to try to keep, that I am trying to keep to myself, like to really unconditionally love myself, to ignore the inner critics, do my best every day, think bigger, dare, intentional, love more wildly. I mean, like all these things. Like,
but
keep
also,
them right here.
I love that because, you know, obviously I'm a coach, like you just said, and I have clients all the time. What I say to my clients is, you cannot remind yourself enough of that. Like, you
it's
cannot.
It's a practice.
Yeah, but it's like every morning, it's like when I do my gratitude and all my practices every morning, we cannot remind ourselves of this stuff enough because we're bombarded by so much negativity all the time. We've got to be conscious of programming ourselves. But
I do.
As we were just saying, you know, just turned 45, woke up and went, okay, enough, stop. Yeah. Enough needless worrying.
It is, because you're not going to control it.
Utter nonsense. No. I was like, okay, 45 years of this. And my son said to me the other day, so obviously he's planning on me leaving the earth at 90, because he told me I was exactly halfway through my life.
He's 12. You're on the downhill, Mom.
He was like, Mom, you're exactly halfway through your life. I was like, I am? Right, thank you, James. Okay, so seemingly now at 45, halfway through my life, I just went, we're done here. And there's such great liberation in saying enough already. Mm-hmm. Enough of the needless worrying and going over things and about things that might never happen. And like you just said in some of your stuff there, unconditionally loving myself, knowing my worth, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Knowing my worth.
And really stepping into that. Like, it's our own minds that are bringing us down all the time. And you're so right. And I was just like, I'm tired of just feeling bad because of my own thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, fuck
because
it.
Of me.
I don't want to anymore. Because of me.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It is. And,
that's it.
And even if something else like affects me, I have that choice mm-hmm. to make in that moment. Like, am I going to choose to think thoughts about it or continue thinking about it for half the day or whatever the fuck? And I'm like, no, I don't need to do that. I can opt out.
I can be, and up until now, I like to use those words, have been known to be the greatest storyteller. Irish people are great. What we call in Irish, Shanachie in Irish, which is storyteller. And let me tell you, my gosh, am I a good storyteller? Can I take like...
spin a yarn.
Yes. Can I take an innocent side glance in a shop and turn it into a freaking trilogy in like half a second? It is a gift. My friend Jupiter always says to me, oh,
wait,
shit,
first
man.
Of all, you have a friend named Jupiter?
Yes.
That's awesome.
I know.
Okay,
she's
sorry.
Awesome.
Wow.
And she's literally... like we're so amazing for each other, because she'll just go, well, that's a beautiful story, and I'll go, well, that's a beautiful story, and instead of each other getting annoyed, we start laughing, because I'll be
so
like
good.
Really, is that a story? She goes, it's not just a story, it's a freaking wild story. And I'm like, oh, okay. And she's like, seriously, how did you go from there to that? And I'm like, yeah, it was kind of easy. I've been doing it for 45 years.
Yeah, you've been practicing that. You've been practicing it. It's a practice, and I'm so good at it. Yeah. I've been surprised at loving more wildly, because that has translated into some weird ways that I didn't expect and transformed like my thoughts about love. Like, can I really, like, I had this whole thing happen with like my rent check and my landlord, and Justin was like, maybe it's to see if you can love them in that situation when you are wrongly accused of this. And I was like, well, that's wild love. That is like when you can really love people that maybe try to break it down, or reframe like someone you're dating perhaps or something, you know, and like turn that around. Like, thank you. Like, I love what you brought to my life, and you know, see ya.
And see you later. And bye-bye now.
Yes. Also, you know what? I want to just thank you for being here today. Today is a special day for you. Yesterday was your 45th birthday, as we've mentioned. So I'm excited that, you know, you feel like you've transformed even, you know, at 45, because I think a lot of people maybe don't see it that way. So I'd love to talk about that at any birthday, which I agree with. And then also, today is 8 years of sobriety for you.
Yes. And it's the 8th of March, and it's I'm a life path 8, and I'm in an 8 year. So we're all about the 8s today.
It's like, an 8 year, 2, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cool.
So it's a 7 year, but I'm in an 8 personal year.
I can't add. Okay. You're
so
right.
So I was in a 7 year last year. So it's a 7 year collectively this year, but I'm in an 8 personal year. And it was only this morning when I woke up that I went, it's the 8th of March. And I said it to my friend Jupiter. She goes, I know. And I went, oh, okay. Well, I'm just saying that it's the 8th of March. I'm in an 8. We were laughing. And I said, but I just had this realization. I'm 8 years sober. I was like, there's all the powers of the 8 coming in today. And 7 is a number that follows me around. And I was born on the 7th.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really powerful year for me. Yesterday was the, you know, the full moon in Virgo. It was a really powerful day. And my sister messaged me yesterday and went, whoa, like, it's your birthday, it's this. And I was like, yeah, I know. And I've had all these incredible, crazy synchronicities, like just God wings from the universe, nonstop, all day since I opened my eyes. And I think it was almost like pushing me off the cliff of when I wanted to go into story last night at like midnight, when I had the most amazing day of my entire life. Trust me, so many beautiful surprises around every corner. And I go into bed at midnight, and I was about to start story time.
Right. Your brain is like seeking out anything it can feel bad about.
Oh, no, I don't know if you can be this happy. Let's start a story. You know, and it's this, and I teach my clients about this, like a lot of us have a ceiling for happiness. It's like...
I haven't heard it put that way.
Can we be this happy? Oh, I don't think so. So I'm going to just do a couple of self-sabotage moves here.
Let me go ahead and bring it back, since I know it's going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how do you overcome that?
Well, first of all, awareness.
Staying aware of it.
Staying aware. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, this is interesting. Look at me going into story because I'm happy. Whew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a part of me, usually the little girl or whatever, like my birthday has never been a great day. I have a lot of disappointment, a lot of trauma attached to my birthday. And so historically, my birthday has been a day where I wake up and it's full of tears and all sorts of stories attached.
Aww.
And yesterday morning I went, not this year, not today. And I would say that between 44 and 45, I've been doing personal work for a very long time. But I would definitely say that my intention last year was to go deep, really go in for that trauma that I've been terrified of. And I did it in a variety of different ways. And I had some super, super difficult, dark weeks last year, some super dark days. But my gosh, coming out the other side, the sense of peace and liberation and expansion that I feel coming into this year is unlike anything I've ever experienced before. And I'm no stranger to meditation and 10-day silent retreats and breath work, but I made that commitment and it looked like breath work intensely, at least one intense breath work session a week. And now I'm becoming a breath work teacher. And then also I was doing chiropractic work, and it's so interesting. I'm with a neurological chiropractor where I live. And James, of course, had been going to the chiropractor, and the doctor kept saying to me, Dr. Rudy kept saying, then we'll get you in, we'll get you in. And I was like, yes, we will. You know, we'll just take care of James first, because a part of me knows that there's stuff in my body. And I'm like, am I really ready? And of course, then Dr. Rudy says, we'll give you your scan and everything for free. And I'm like, oh, no.
There's no getting out of it.
There's no getting out of it. And it is wild to see where and how our body stores trauma. Mm-hmm. My life was, the tale of my life up until now was in that scan. Like when he showed me that scan, I was like, wow, wow, and wow. And
like what?
Just where I was storing trauma, where I was storing energy, like just from past trauma, sexual trauma, how my lower chakras, my sacrum, my root was completely turned off. There was no messaging going up to the brain at all. And I said to him, you know, you can't obviously tell me this because you would have to be scanning me from when I was a kid, right? Mm-hmm. But I said, looking at this, I wonder, did that ever turn on? Because our body will always protect us. Mm-hmm. When we experience any kind of sexual trauma or anything like that, the body protects us. That's its role.
So it was never even a part
of your... I don't know, you see. Yeah. I don't know that for sure. But from looking at the scans and looking at my history and the trauma and the work I've done, I remember looking at it going, I said to him, is it a possibility? He said, 100% it's a possibility. But we would have had to be scanning you your whole life to prove it. Do you know what I mean? Could it have been things that happened to me later on in life in the modeling industry or through addiction? 100%. But it was just interesting. Like, you know, when we look at Van Bessel der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score, which I've read and studied, and Gabor Mate's work. And Gabor Mate was a huge influence in my recovery. And the body really does keep the score. And as soon as I started doing my intense breathwork journeys, detoxes, fasts, and just going in for this stuff and having a lot of, you know, working with coaches and therapists, when he was moving, they were doing the adjustments. I remember one day they just couldn't get my neck to move. And he just kept saying, relax, relax. As soon as he even went to touch my body, my whole body froze. Like the first time I lay on the table, and James was beside me, I actually start crying now. And James was beside me. He's like, it's okay, Mom. I've been doing this for months. It's actually really easy. And I just thought, there's a lifetime of trauma stored in me. And as soon as somebody, and I was thinking, maybe it's even because he was male, right? Yeah. Went to put his hands on my body, my whole body froze. And it took weeks, if not months, for me to even allow any kind of movement or touch. And eventually, when they got to make that first big adjustment, which was months and months in my neck, the wave of emotion that moved through my body. And you know, when you're a kid and your lip trembles when you're crying, I cried like I can't remember ever crying like that before. I was on the table and I was just
crying. James like, oh my gosh, what's happening?
Like, yeah, but he's, do you know what's so beautiful about that? Because I think it's really important for kids to see, you know, working through stuff.
I do too.
You know, really important. And, you know, James just said, you know what, Mom, when I was having my chiropractic work done, I felt like you did. And I didn't cry because I was embarrassed. And I said, so look at what a good teaching moment that was for him.
That's so cool.
And he went and he was having chiropractic work done. And we were sitting in the car on the way home and he started crying. And I was like, I gave him permission to feel.
Yeah.
Which is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Because he was like, but there were so many people around. Because in this chiropractors, the
people are, the beds
everybody's
are
everywhere.
Like,
yeah, and the beds are out. And so it was so powerful. It's been such a transformational journey. And to see where my body wants to go back and store everything in my neck again. And, you know, how we have to work very gently with balancing the emotional release and the integration and being present with my body and listening to myself and... I said to him yesterday, like I went there yesterday to the chiropractors and I just said, I cannot. He said, how are you feeling? I said, oh my God, amazing. I said, honestly, at Christmas, I didn't know we were going to get here. I didn't believe you.
So you went yesterday on your birthday?
I did.
I love it.
And they gave me a gorgeous birthday gift of a massage and everything. I was like, there's just such kind, amazing people there. And I was just there yesterday and I said to him, I didn't think we were going to get here. He goes, oh, I knew we were going to get here. But I said there were moments where I thought,
oh, well, how long have you been a transformation coach?
And I have been a coach for one-to-one probably for about 8 years now.
Well, so you're having this big transformational moment in your own life. Did that surprise you? I mean, was there a part of you that was like, oh, wow, you know what? More is possible. I mean, I'm sure as somebody in the transformation world and believing in that, helping people with that, I know that there's always more possible, you know, but still, did you have a moment of sort of like, huh?
I'm always having that moment. Like in the morning when I do my meditation, which I've been doing since my teens, by the way, and I'm 45, like I'm no stranger
to
meditation.
Good. Wow.
Like every morning.
I wish
morning.
I had. No, I'm, and I haven't done it.
I was saying this to a colleague who, from Mindful Magazine, and we were having a beautiful meeting the other day and we got into conversation and I said, isn't it wild? Like I sit in my meditation every morning and then after I go, God, it's worth doing. But it's like I'm doing it for the first time.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, this is why I do this every day, every day. And it reminds me of my old teacher, Sagyam Rinpoche, who sadly passed a few years ago. And he used to say to me, every single morning when you wake up, start with the beginner's mind. And in my
20s,
when I was studying with him, I didn't grasp what he meant by that. I didn't. Like, my consciousness wasn't there yet. But it's interesting that he planted really awesome seeds in me. Because now it's like I've been watering them for years.
Yes.
And now they're starting to kind of bud and grow. And sometimes I really wish he was here so I could say, oh, I get it now. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it takes time.
What do you think that means, starting with a beginner's mind? Is there a certain amount of letting ego go with that? I mean, because to me, that means a lot of that. And I just think of so many people who don't do it.
Well, we could go back into story. It means starting fresh every day. It's like an open and curious mind. Right? Like, what does the word mindfulness mean? Being aware in the present moment with an open and curious mind without judgment.
Yeah.
That's what it means. And so that's a moment to moment practice for everybody. And so every day is a teaching day, like it's earth school. I remember Dolores Cannon saying that years ago when I was reading her books. And I remember one day she said, you came here to be in earth school. And it resonated so much with me because my father used to say, an education in the classroom is not an education for life is learned outside that. And it stuck with me. You know, it's like you build character from the interactions you have, from the experiences you have, from the people you meet. Everything you meet on your path shapes the person you become. Like I remember when I'm just about to get sober again, but I've been sober now for 8 years with zero relapses or anything. But before, this morning I woke up and I thought, anniversaries are interesting. Yesterday, I was like, oh, I admit you're sober tomorrow. But this morning, I felt that moment 8 years ago when I got down on my knees and I started praying.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was obviously the night after my birthday, and I don't think you need to be a rocket scientist to have any idea that it was quite a wild night, of which I don't remember any most at all. And this morning I was like, oh, I remember. I was so freaking scared. I was so scared. I was like, if this doesn't stop, I might not be here. And my son will have no mom. And I am all he has. And it's like, what has to happen for you to stop this? So I was just like, okay, I'm all out of options here. I'm going to get down on my knees. And I sincerely prayed to God. And I said, okay, this is the deal. This is the deal. And I'll keep my end of the deal. If you help get me sober and keep me sober this time, having spent many years in the rooms in AA, never really having the intention of getting sober granted, but it's more complicated than that. And I just said, every single day I wake up, the first words that will come out of my mouth are not only thank you, but how can I serve? How can I serve? And I will be of service in whatever way that looks like. I don't know right now what that looks like. And I have never wanted to drink since that moment. If you don't believe in a miracle and you knew me before, I'm telling you, there is no other word for that but a miracle.
Are people that knew you before like, what? Who are you?
I mean, there's no other word for that. Like I was just saying to you before, I was looking back through photos of my 30th birthday. And I look older in my 30th birthday pictures than I do now.
My 30th birthday was a booze and cocaine filled.
Yeah, seriously. And I could see my eyes. I was high as a kite. And my face was bloated. And I looked like shit.
I bet you still looked gorgeous, but you probably looked different.
Like, there was no...
You could just see it, though.
There was no life. It was like, I was looking through the photos and I was like, my eyes were dead.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing in there. And I could see the sadness in her eyes. Yes, she was having this big party and everything, but all I could see is sadness.
Are you ready to up-level your pleasure practice? I have in mind, and the main things that have helped me are the tools that I've found from Wands. Wands creates luxurious products that encourage us all to honor our body, celebrate our sexuality, and live in pleasure. With more pleasure all the time. One of my favorites, if you listen to this show, then you probably already know, is the cervix wand. Wands has trademarked their number one best-selling glass pleasure wand. It's for vaginal and anal de-armoring, and it's designed for cervical and G-spot stimulation. And let me tell you, it's incredible. It's helped thousands of women become more connected to their bodies and their pleasure, and supports them to heal pelvic pain through self-yoni massage, and helps awaken more pleasure. Just recently, I've ordered the Venus Wand, another trademarked wand from Wands, and it's designed to activate and awaken the G-spot and more. Also, don't miss one of their new offerings, which are free bleed blankets that can be used as waterproof intimacy blankets. They have a beautiful selection now available. But take a look around at wands.com, that's W-A-A-N-D-S, because they have a huge selection of incredible items like yoni eggs, crystal pleasure wands in amethyst, black obsidian, anything that your heart desires, and so much more. Check them out at wands.com. That's W-A-A-N-D-S.com. And use my link in the show notes to get 10% off, or simply enter my code, Amy Edwards, at checkout. Again, that's W-A-A-N-D-S, wands.com. Y'all, I have started using higher dose products, and I am such a fan. You know, I don't put anything on this podcast that I am not 100% completely behind. And I have a special discount code for you for all higher dose products. I'm so excited. If you don't know, Higher Dose is a wellness company. They have wellness tech products, they have tools, they have supplements, and they have body care. They have so many things that are hot right now too, that are really biohacking and up-leveling our lives at home, which is really cool. They have an infrared sauna blanket. They have an infrared PEMF mat that I'm so excited to be sharing about soon. One of my favorites though is the Red Light Face Mask. It stimulates collagen, it activates glowing skin, reduces fine lines, regenerates cells. And it's soft. It's not like one of the hard plastic ones. So you can kind of move it around on your body, which I've been doing. And I am seeing amazing results. I am absolutely addicted to it. I use it every single night. And I'm using it in conjunction with one of their other products, the Glow Serum. And I'm very picky about what I put on my skin. And I am loving the Glow Serum. It's specially formulated to plump and hydrate and stimulate radiant skin, which that's the goal. They have a ton of other products too, magnesium ingestibles, magnesium body care, which has a healing oil and a serotonin soap that you can use in your bath, which I've been using too. It boosts your mood, enhances your skin, and deepens your detox, gets you calmed down. Anyway, I'm a fan, so I'm so excited to offer you 15% off using my code MAGIC15. Go to the show notes. You can click through on the link right there, or if you go to Higher Dose, just enter the code MAGIC15 and you'll get 15% off. Higher Dose has been featured in Goop, Glamour, Elle, Vogue, Bazaar, Allure, basically you name it. And there's a reason why. So go check it out. It's at higherdose.com and enter my code MAGIC15 for 15% off.
The gift of sobriety, like, is just a gift that keeps on giving. Like, when you say continual transformation, when my first year in sobriety was such a massive transformation, I thought, I can't go through a bigger transformation than this. Like, this is it. And then last year, and then other things that have happened, and I'm like, shit, this just keeps getting better.
Yeah.
Like, and better, and better. Like, the more work you do, the more you surrender, the more you trust, it just keeps getting better. I'm like, how much better can this get? And
that's a good question to ask.
Yeah.
Keep asking that. Yes. Yeah. How much better can it get?
How much better can this
how
get?
Many more miracles can there be? Like, yeah. That's what we have to ask, because it's when we say, like, how much worse can it get? You know, that's when we're calling in the wrong thing, right?
Like, that was my old, like, mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, this always happens to me.
Right, yeah. Right. Oh, you know me, always like the bad thing, whatever it is.
Or I would like constantly make derogatory comments about myself during my modeling years in New York. And I now know it's what I call, I was a fill the gap person. So I was uncomfortable in silence, which is obviously why I was drawn to meditation, right? So my soul was drawing me back to a practice that was helping me learn. And we learn, like, there's nothing about what I went through that I regret, because I wouldn't be the person I am today. So I genuinely don't regret anything. But I do see what a great teacher it all was. But I definitely, the drink was such a huge comfort factor for me in social situations. And everyone's like, but you're so outgoing. I'm actually extrovert, introvert.
Yeah.
And so I am, even though everybody would think I'm very bubbly and stuff, that's an aspect of me. But when I don't know you and I'm making small talk, I'm deeply, deeply insecure, uncomfortable, thinking about what to say. So
me too. I can really relate to everything you just said. Yeah. And I want to ask you about that. Fill the gap thing, because I can relate to that too. And I think that since we're both ruminators, which mm-hmm. we've talked about before, and on your live, which everyone can check out, you know, that is definitely probably related, right? Like the silence of the mind, then your mind goes to the negative and you just...
And isn't it interesting to observe where we go? So there's like, you know, I used to observe. So I just said, I'm going to go in today. My teacher used to say, I just want you to practice listening. I had such amazing teachers, and they would give me like one seemingly simple exercise to do that would totally transform my life. Mm-hmm. Be like, okay, so you're a fill the gap. So I call it mind the gap, but then, you know, I'm a fill the gap person.
Let's do that. I like that better.
And he would say to me, just go and be the observer and just listen with the intention of listening. That's it. Just listen. Mm-hmm. Which I would be there going, oh my fucking God, I must never have shut up before. Like, I can't even imagine what it was like being around me when I was drinking and partying. Oh my God. And then I realized growing up.
You mean just like nonstop?
Nonstop. Just like, okay. If anybody's not looking, I'm doing like the hands where it's just keep talking. And then I realized, I remember like boyfriends coming to our house when we were young, and they'd almost like leave the house and go, take a deep breath, because it was intense, right? I'm one of five girls. And so you come to dinner in our house and nobody was listening to anybody. Everybody was just talking at each other.
Wow.
And I realized, wow, it's a trauma thing. It's a trauma response to just keep talking over each other all the time and not listen. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much just from listening. But then I learned, I had this impulse to just interject, and to be with it in that moment is so uncomfortable. Just to presence it and get mm-hmm. quiet. It's like, and to see where it is in your body, and it started in my gut, and my heart would start palpitating and my hands would start getting sweaty and I'd get kind of tension in my jaw. And my teacher was like, I just want you to observe. And it's hard. Because yeah. The fill the gap distracts that, right? But I always used to fill the gap with something derogatory about myself. So like if someone gave me a compliment, I would almost like say, I'm going to tell you the truth about who
right.
I am, right?
Right.
Like in some shape or form.
Oh, but here's what you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you knew this. And it's like, I don't know. It's almost like trying to get them to see you in a different way or accept you, but you're using negativity. It's very interesting where the mind goes. And to stop myself doing that took years.
Yes, and it's very challenging.
Very challenging. And mm-hmm. I just realized, my gosh, you're so mean to yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, what about saying something nice? And I remember when I started doing mirror work and looking in the mirror and saying something nice to myself, I would just burst out crying. Like, just even looking in the mirror and saying, I like you, I would burst out crying.
Yeah, I've cried doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, wow, isn't that interesting? That I can't even be kind to myself from that level. And modeling for 20 years, it would be wake up and go, oh, your jeans don't fit, or your skin's like this today.
Oh, I'm sure that's tough.
Comparing and everything. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, you know, I used to say, oh, you know, people talk to me about the modeling industry. And I say, Yeah, no, I was grand. Like, I don't really think the industry affected me. Well, there's a nice story.
There's a story.
Right? There's a story. Oh my gosh, does it affect you? It affects your body image. It affects how you see the world. It affects how you see yourself. I mean, you cannot spend over 20 years in that industry and not have a warped body image. You just can't. I'm sorry. It's not possible. And I realized that when I had a baby and I got pregnant and my body changed. And when I had James and I'm a single mom for 12 years, my only form of income at that time was modeling. And so I went back to work 10 days after I had James. And I remember sitting at the shoot. I was breastfeeding him, doing a shoot for a department store and thinking to myself, what a stupid job I have. I have a stupid job that I have to fit into a certain size of clothes. And I feel all this pressure. And I just remember in that moment going, oh, this is not what I want to do forever. Like, you know, this is this is insane. So many of those moments. But then I started to realize the relationship I had with my body maybe wasn't as healthy as I thought. And I was really hard on myself because I couldn't lose the weight quick enough, right? And I couldn't get back into my jeans. And, you know, my mom used to say, oh, I don't understand it. I had five of you and I was back in my jeans in 2 weeks. Like, not helpful.
2 weeks? Like, wow.
I know. But you know when you're like, just not helpful.
No,
like,
not helpful.
Not a helpful comment.
On the opposite end, I have a friend who was like, 9 months on, 9 months off. And I was like, well, that's depressing. Holy shit. You know? So I don't know. It's any way you slice it, it's kind of just like, oh, great. It's just a thing. You just have to love yourself in this moment. Yeah. That's the learning of it. Loving yourself in this moment. And modeling probably doesn't help. It doesn't foster that.
No, and that's why it was part of the huge drive to do what I do today.
Yeah.
You know, I rarely met a girl who was super happy and comfortable in her skin and loving life. And I met thousands of girls.
Yeah.
You know, and I
You say rarely. Did you meet one?
Rarely.
Did you every once in a while?
Every once
you
in
can
a while.
You can think of one.
There was a couple of girls who were quite grounded in London.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
That I worked with who All were right. grounded, but also exited, got married, had a family, you know, didn't stay in it for as long as I did, kind of, you know, chose different paths.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of girls like that who went in a different direction. So a couple of girls who were pretty level-headed, who ended up going into different careers quite early. And yeah, but it was, I mean, there's a lot of disconnection, disharmony, unease. I mean, you're looking at these girls, when I think back to it, like in my 20s in rooms when, you know, you're doing a lot of underwear castings and swimsuits, you're looking at these women who, quote unquote, are the most perfect bodies in the world, yet some of them are the most insecure people. Mm-hmm. Which brings us back to, it's all about how you feel from the inside out.
Yep.
You know?
Which is a big part of your messaging. It starts inside, and mine too. You know, like that's, and I've discovered that too, because right now a friend of mine was asking, like, how are you doing or whatever? And I was like, I'm just like as the happiest I've ever been. And I mean, those vows help, but I was like, I'm not my thinnest. I'm not or fittest, not by a long shot. I've gained weight in the last couple of years. And I was like, and I'm not my richest. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly not my youngest. And so I was like, but I am my happiest.
Yeah.
Am I my sexiest? Maybe.
Yes.
And I was just like, huh. You know, I was like, wow, it's just wild when you do the work and show up for yourself. And because there's always going to be the outside thoughts that you can perceive and tell stories about, right?
And it's just part of the human journey. Mm-hmm. I think if we can understand that, like, for many years, I thought that by going on my silent retreats and doing all my meditation, that I was getting somewhere. I think there was a part of me that thought there was a destination. Like, if I do this enough, that I'm going to become whatever that was. I do think my mind had a future person in mind that was going to have this all figured out, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. That's what's called being in your 20s. And now I realize that it's actually loving life in all its messiness as it's unfolding. And having come through 20 years of being medicated for anxiety and depression and then self-medicating with everything and anything for so many years, a lot of that journey was driven by this societal messaging of, if you feel grief or sadness or depression or loneliness, there's something wrong with you. And you have to fix yourself and you have to get rid of those emotions. And I think that's the most poisonous, toxic messaging that we send out, mm-hmm. especially to young people. And my greatest learning on this journey has been to learn to accept all of who I am.
Yeah.
And at what point in time did we decide that 50% of us wasn't valid? If I came here to be a human being and have a full human experience.
Earth school.
What part of me thinks that I'm not going to have to experience grief and loneliness and sadness and some depression? And what if they're all really important parts of us giving us information about where we are in our journey and where we're being directed towards from spirit?
Mm-hmm, because I love that.
I know depression is a lack of expression. And I know when I had chronic depression and I had suicidal ideation and I was suicidal many times, I know that I also had a complete inability to express what I was feeling, how I was thinking. I remember my boyfriend, who was amazing, that I was with for many, many years. I take a deep breath because I still remember that day. And I remember sitting on the couch and he said to me, just tell me how you feel. And I want to help you. And I really wanted to tell him, but it was like I felt trapped in my body. I couldn't express to him how I felt, and it was so frustrating.
Did you even really know how you felt?
No, I just remember in my head, it was like this deep sadness, and I just wanted to curl up from the world, and I just didn't want to do anything. But the pain that I was feeling inside, and then the self-destruction that I was doing, I was destroying us. Mm-hmm. I was destroying everything, and it was like I couldn't stop. I didn't know how to stop. I just had this self-hatred, self-loathing, just felt so crap in myself. And like something was saying to me, you're not on path, you're not happy, this is not where you're meant to be, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't know how to listen to those messages then. I was trying to fit into a version of what I thought I had to be successful. Or I'd been a model since I was 15, and everywhere I turn, people go, oh my God, you're one of the first ever really successful models to leave Ireland. And, you know, you did X, Y, and Z. And so I felt like I couldn't go, actually, I don't really like traveling the world on my own and living in a model apartment. Because people would say, do you know how many people would love to be in your shoes?
Right, sure.
I heard that like a million times. And so yeah. Instead of speaking my truth, I just put up and chill up. Mm-hmm. And just went, well, obviously, this is supposed to be the most amazing thing ever. Because there's people that would literally die to have the life I'm having. And I should be happy. Oh, how dangerous is that?
Should.
How
the
dangerous.
Shoulds.
The shoulds. Mm-hmm. And so there was so much of what I did. Like I'm a chronic people pleaser in recovery as well. There's a lot of things I'm in recovery from. But definitely people pleasing is something I'm really in recovery from. And it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. Because it was always about, like, what do other people think? You know, what does my agent want? What does this person want? What does my partner want? And very rare did I really go in and go, what do you want? Mm-hmm. What do you want?
Yeah, because it's a getting in touch with what you want too, which, like, I feel like that's just happened in the last few years for mm-hmm. me, where I'm way more understanding of, like, what I want. And especially sexually, like, that's been a huge one for me. Like, about a year ago, I was like, and I had a deep conversation with a friend and I was like, do you really know what you want? Like, let's really go. And she finally was like, I don't think I do. And I was like, okay, we're like, that's a pleasing space that, you know, you're like worried about the other person so much. Like, so
and I think like at 45, I'm just opening up to that. I know it sounds really weird.
Doesn't sound weird to me.
But I am
too. And like, sometimes I'll beat myself up a little bit for that. Cause I'm like, oh man, wow, this is taking me a long time. And, you know, but I was so worried about my body
when I was younger.
Yeah.
You know, about like how I was being seen, like mm-hmm. just physically. And then I never had sex sober.
There you go. And that too, right? I mean, I know that was a big part of my life too. Yeah. So, yeah.
Like, I remember when I got sober going, how am I going to have sex?
I know.
Like
I am so self-conscious.
yeah. And it's like, oh, wow. I don't know if I can do this. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wow, drink isn't just a numbing agent for emotions. It's actually like an agent to help you communicate with people, be in social situations, have any kind of confidence, have sex. I'm like, the list just goes on and on. So like you pull that away and you suddenly have to, I would say it's the greatest thing I've ever pulled away. But at the same time, you now have to feel everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's huge.
Oh God. When we had to go to that play party last year, I did a podcast about it with Kimmy Inch, and I talk about it a lot on the show. I mean, I had a nervous breakdown beforehand because I was like, I'm not having a drink beforehand. And she was like, oh, I don't allow any substances. This is Eros medicine or whatever. And I was like, I literally had a nervous breakdown. Justin and I had a fight. I mean, it was a mess, but we still went and had the best experience of my life. And I felt way more in touch with everything about myself. And
but
I was
look
like,
at,
who knew?
Look at what you had to move through
to
get yourself there. And look at how many people
it was days,
wouldn't days go and actually take the step.
A lot of my friends were like, no way. I wouldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And I was like, I know. I can't even believe I am sober.
Yeah. I mean, the sober world in the beginning. Well, first of all, I used to think everybody drinks. Like, what's the point? What's the point in living? Because like everything, births, deaths, celebrations, lunches, dinners. I was like,
playground time.
Like, I'm never going to enjoy anything again, ever. And I always say, I've been saying this for years. There's a book in me of stupid things I used to say, probably a trilogy, actually, because there's a lot of things. But I remember like everybody I know does the same thing. So like, you know, obviously justifying my behavior because everybody around me.
What was the stupid thing you said?
Oh, so I used to say, well, I don't know anyone who doesn't do coke or alcohol or whatever. Like as if every single person in the world did it. Every single person. Like, I'm like, but everybody does it. And now I'm like, oh, I don't know anybody who does that. Like I have totally transformed my world. I haven't seen drugs in years, in over 8 years, and none of my friends really drink, none of them. So there's a story. And so it really helps you to understand that we create our world. We create everything in our world, including the people in it. Like we create it all. And so you're always going to create a world that's going to feed back to you confirmation of what you're thinking. So if you don't want to give up alcohol and don't want to give up partying because there's nobody you know that doesn't do that and everybody, you're going to keep feeding back that. You're going to keep creating experiences to prove yourself right. You will always, 100% of the time, prove yourself right. That's what we do. We create to prove ourselves right. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to change your life, you've got to change your story. Stop telling the story. Now I don't know anybody like... I was in my friends last night. There's like seven adults. Nobody was drinking. I don't know anyone who drinks, right? It's like, oh, that's interesting. Where were these people hiding for all those years? Who knew that there was other normal, there was people in the world who didn't have this lifestyle? So that's been really intriguing for me to go, you know, and using absolutes. I was always like using absolutes,
everybody.
To justify my behavior. Everybody does this, everybody does that. Like I'm saying, like a 5-year-old. Well, I mean, everybody last
you
night
always.
In the nightclub. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Always, everybody.
Like, really, always.
And I'm like, okay. And a huge part of that was taking personal responsibility when I got down on my knees 8 years ago. And I was like, every freaking choice I have made in my life has led me to this point on my knees in this moment. Shit. Like,
yeah.
I either take that moment seriously right now because my next choice matters. Mm-hmm. So my next choice, either I continue down that path or I create a new path. And like, there is a lot on the line. And then part of me was like, do you have to come to the edge of the cliff all the time? It doesn't have to be this way.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't have to be this way. You don't have to keep self-sabotaging and going into these spirals. And I did what I call moderation Mary drinking for a while. That's like a
moderation
full-time job.
Mary drinking.
It's a full-time job. So people who have a problem with alcohol or people who, you know, I don't like the word alcoholic because I think people start thinking of somebody on the street who's down and out and lost everything. And I think there is hundreds of thousands of functional alcoholics.
There's a spectrum.
Yeah, there's a spectrum. And I think if you have a drink and you have another drink and you don't know when to stop and you're the last one at the party, possibly really need to look at your relationship with alcohol. If alcohol is affecting your mood, your sleep, your relationships, your work, you know, your parenting, you need to look at your relationship with alcohol. And I'll tell you the biggest truth. If you struggle with anxiety and depression and you're drinking, you're making it worse.
100%.
Like, yeah. That to me is, most things are up for debate, not that. It's just not. For somebody who was medicated for 20 years, I can tell you what removed 95% of my anxiety and depression overnight was removing alcohol.
Mm-hmm. It's proven. A depressant. It's proven.
Yes.
Yes.
So for me, that was all really big. And so moderation drinking, it's a thing. And I coach women in sobriety in lots of different sober circles, and we talk about this a lot. Like, it is a full-time job. If you're going to commit to being a moderate drinker when you can't, it's going to take up your entire life.
Because you think about it all day long?
All day long.
Like, so okay, if you're going, I'm going to have this to drink. I'm going to, you're like planning it.
Oh, yes. Okay, I'm going out on Friday.
It's an obsession.
It's an obsession. I'm going out on Friday. Going to have a glass of wine, then I'm going to have a glass of water, then I'm going to have a glass of wine and a glass of water, and then I'm going to leave because I have this to do on Saturday morning. It never happened. It never happens. It's a myth. It's a fairy tale. And you're never present either. So that's another thing, because you're monitoring your glass of wine going, am I drinking too fast? Am I drinking too slow? Are other people going to notice that my drink is nearly gone and they all just got another round? And then there's the sigh of relief when somebody says, we get another round. Oh, thank God, I can finish my glass. It is a nightmare to try and moderate alcohol when you can't control alcohol. Mm-hmm. It's literally the worst thing you can do to yourself. So somebody said to me the other day, oh, I think you've done enough emotional work on yourself now to be able to have a glass of wine. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't want it. I don't even want to test that theory out. Like, my life is so amazing without it. Why would I put it back in? Why would I do that?
I know.
That's insane.
I was listening to this TikTok the other day, and this woman from Spain was talking about life in the US versus life in Spain. And she lives here now. And she was like, and every evening we take the kids, you know, with her cute Spanish accent, we take the kids to the playground. There is a cafe nearby and we all have a drink and we have a glass of wine and we enjoy the night and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, was that life? Is that better? You know, am I missing out? I don't know. I had a little bit of like, is this, am I being too extreme? Mm. You know, like, I don't know. And, but when you say it like that, I wholeheartedly agree. My life is so much better. My moods are even. I'm more in touch with my intuition.
Yes.
My skin's better.
Yep.
My eyes feel better. My hydration's better, my sleep's better, like all of it. So, I mean, like, you know, the list goes on and on. I know if I have even a glass of wine at night, like enjoying the night with people, that I'm not going to sleep as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it interrupts your sleep.
Yes, I mean, it interrupts your sleep. It's like, it
actually
a fact.
Brings nothing to the table. Like, right. It brings the illusion of stress relief. And I say the illusion of stress relief because when it lowers the GABA, you know, when it inhibits and kind of stops the monkey mind and slows down those brainwave patterns during the time that you're drinking, it compensates when you stop drinking.
It's like borrowed.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Like
that's
borrowing.
Perfect. That's that's exactly it. You're borrowing that kind of calm feeling for a while. And however much of calm you've borrowed, you're going to get back. And the payback is anxiety. That's where the word anxiety comes from. With interest.
Yes.
So it actually gives you nothing. It gives you the illusion of being a stress reliever, but it's not. So it brings nothing to the table and it's super toxic and we don't need it to connect. I was reared in a country in Ireland where we're indoctrinated with alcohol is used for everything, but that's also...
Oh my gosh, are you ever? I mean, that's one of the countries that you think of, you know, with a high rate of alcoholism. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, just travel the world. What are we known for? Every single country you go to, there's an Irish bar. Like, literally, there's nowhere you can't go to that there's not an Irish bar. And sure, that was my badge of honor. Traveling the world as a model for 20 years. You're Irish, let's start doing shots. And it became the badge of honor. And I'll tell you, I was a good drinker.
I bet you were. It's in your blood. Yeah, I don't know.
I was a very good drinker. And I was great fun and party alley. And that was a thing. I remember when I gave up alcohol going,
who am I?
I wondered, do I even have a personality? Because party alley was an identity. So I'm like,
is that what she was called?
Oh yeah, party alley.
Oh yeah, yeah. Party alley.
That was a thing. And so I was like, oh, do I have a personality? Can I hold a conversation? You know? am I funny? Am I not? And I'm like, this is insane in my 30s to be like asking these questions for the first time. Yeah. Right?
But some people will go through their whole lives and not ask those questions, I think, you know, not which try to wild. Find out who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a million different ways. And so I'm so grateful for the journey it's brought me on. But like I found alcohol at 14, 15 years of age.
Same.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, like right when I was in my teenage years, had no idea who I am, was deeply insecure, and then just found a way to numb out. And I remember being the girl in the group who always drank more than everybody and didn't have the off switch then and would be getting sick. I mean, the pattern was there. It was like
It was for me too. Yeah.
I had no off switch.
And I don't even have a good reason. I didn't have a lot of trauma. I don't have a high ACE score. My parents weren't big drinkers. I mean, both my grandfathers were alcoholics, but I don't really have a good reason, except I just did. And I liked it for some reason. But I mean, like, I've heard those things where they're like, you know, how many times have you been blackout drunk? And I'm like, I'm supposed to be able to count? like, no, you know, like, I mean, maybe you can, but I could not. So, no.
Oh, blackouts became... a very normal part of my life.
Yeah.
Like at a certain point in the night, like 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe, I don't remember anything. So like I just used to sit and wait in the morning for my phone to
like,
go
what
up.
Did I do?
So what did I do? Where was I? I mean, this morning when I woke up and went, oh my God, 8 years of not having the fear, because I had the fear so badly when I drank, not waiting on someone to tell me where I was. You know, how I got home, all of those things. Like, how dangerous is that? And just 8 years of waking up, not feeling hungover. Oh my God. Is amazing.
Yeah.
Is amazing. Not questioning myself. Not worried if I bumped into someone. What did I say? How was I? Yeah, no, I'm never going back there.
It builds a lot of self-trust, you know? And you were talking about, I know one of your tenets that you talk about is activating loving yourself through mindset meditation, breath work. And I mean, I think that there's that self-trust in there, and that when you're building that, you can count on yourself, right? Like then it's like this, like you're creating a loop of self-trust, I suppose.
I mean, I couldn't count on myself at all. I couldn't trust myself to go out in a night out. I would always let myself down. Always.
Hmm. And I mean, that has implications across the board in your life.
How are you supposed to attract in a healthy relationship and good friendships and people who you trust and they can trust you when you can't even trust yourself?
Yeah.
On any level.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it took so much from me. And I just look at it, like also what I allow into my life now is so different. You know, the type of people that I value spending time with, you know, people who... Like, I want to get to know people's hearts and minds. You know, that's what life is about to me. It's about connection and community. And I have manifested and surrounded myself with the most incredibly beautiful group of human beings. Like, I feel so blessed. But I know I created that. I created that through intention, through doing the work, through also letting go of people, places and things that really didn't serve me, that made me feel less than. That made smart comments, right? That put me down. It's like letting go of those things. And letting go is a huge part of the path. And if you can't let go, you can't call in what's really meant for you.
Totally.
There's no space.
And it's again, it's a practice, at least for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's a constant practice, like all the time, noticing what I'm holding on to and what I can let go of to make space.
Every day, every night, I try and make a practice of saying, okay, what can I let go of today?
Ooh.
What didn't go well today? I have a 5-minute journal on my website that's free. And it's just 2 pages, super simple. And my evening practice, I've refined over years because I bring it into corporates and I've done kind of surveys and go, what works, what doesn't? Because I know with habits that if it's going to take up too much time, people will do it for 5 days or 7 days. So with this journal, I had really good feedback that people were doing it for 30 and 60 days. I'm like, okay, so I've refined it down to a list of questions where it literally takes 5 minutes.
And so what are the questions?
So what didn't go well today? So what we're doing here is we're reflecting on the day. We're bringing up what didn't go well. The next question is, what can I learn from this? So you're doing all this work without even realizing it just by answering the questions. The next question is, I am letting go of.
I love it.
So we let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into what went well today. Something that made me smile. What can I learn from this? And then tomorrow I look forward to. So what I call it a releasing and repatterning process. So you're going over your day, you're letting go, and your next morning starts the night before. The energy that we go to sleep in is the energy we wake up in. And I'm super aware of that. So I'm always noticing what energy I go to sleep in. And if I feel like I'm ruminating or going into story or doing anything like that, I think I go backwards from 100 and think of 100 things I'm grateful for. And I always fall asleep. I never, ever remember where I fall asleep. It's like counting sheep, but using gratitude.
I love it.
And so I don't think I've ever reached zero. Ever.
Yeah.
I don't know where. I mean, I think once or twice I've gotten to 40 or 30, but I obviously just, I'm thinking of different things I'm grateful for. And then the next minute I'm going to sleep.
Oh, that's a good trick.
So then you wake up in the morning and that's the energy that you wake up in, right? Mm-hmm. And then we catch that moment in the morning. And my morning pages are three things I'm grateful for, my intention for the day, and three action steps.
Ooh,
yeah. So I keep it in threes. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for many, many, many years. So many years. Gratitude changed my life. And there's so many of these practices that are spoken about in our space. But what I always say is we're in an age of information, where we've so much information, but not enough action.
It's overwhelming too. You're like, oh my gosh, I have to do 18 things just to do my morning routine. And you're like, maybe I'll just sit here and scroll.
Yeah.
What else do I need to do? What else? Ooh, she's cute and has good advice, you know?
And I'm like, I'd rather my clients do 5 minutes of something every day than an hour on a Saturday. Because it's the consistent small habits that are going to create great change in your life. And so for me, win the morning, win the day is something I've been saying for years. For me, it's so important. Mm-hmm. I have to win the morning to win the day. It doesn't mean I'm guaranteed a good day. None of us are, right? But definitely I have to set an intention and get grounded in the morning, because I'm a Vata body type in Ayurvedic. I'm also prone to anxiety. I know so much about myself now that I know if I don't ground myself, come into my body and do these practices, I'm gone.
Right. Like, you're setting yourself up for like all the stuff you don't want.
Yeah, it's very difficult to pull myself back when I don't have a good morning routine. Mm-hmm. It's easier to start myself off.
Yeah, big time. So what about last night? What'd you do when you started to tell the stories?
Last night, I actually got up and went... Excuse my language, fuck this. I'm 45. This is not the way this year is going to start. And I got up and I wrote a page of, I get to, I call it.
Yeah, right.
So
on.
Instead of saying I have to do this, because a lot of us, like, as you know, I coach parents and I coach lots of different people. And what I hear is them saying, I have to get up and bring the kids to school. I have to make the kids breakfast. I have to bring the kids to sport. And I was like, how about we switch that to I get to? Mm-hmm. I get to take the kids to school. I get to make my kids breakfast. I get to go and watch them play sports. So when I'm like in that mode, I write my I get to list. So I get to do, and I list all these things. And you will be, as you can see, these things really excite me. It is always so freaking exciting when you write an I get to list and you get to see all the things every day that you get to do.
I love
So like last night I was like, I get to come and go and see Amy tomorrow. I get to drive to Austin. Mm-hmm. I get to see my friend in the morning. The list got so long so quickly and it shifts your mentality so quickly. Totally shifts your mentality because now you're focusing on all of these beautiful miracles and blessings that you have in your life.
Yeah.
And that's training and that's practice.
Yeah. You end up saying, wow,
yeah.
I do it too. I do it. In fact, I think I did it today. I mean, but I just do it out loud and just for me, it's like this practice of catching myself in those moments. And I'm like, nope, remember that you get to do this. Because I know too, like, to just to put it in perspective, if someone's considering doing this, like think about the times that you don't feel well and can't, like literally can't. Then you're like, oh man, what I would give to... Yeah. Be able to get up and feel good and not nauseous or whatever it is.
In my book years ago, I wrote a book for moms called Minding Mom, It's Time to Take Care of You. I think it came out in 2016.
Oh, cool.
And one of the things that I put in that
Is that like on Amazon or something?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. Yeah, so for that. It's literally just for new moms. New moms. So it's all about body image and nutrition and fitness and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in it was called Stop, Catch, Change. And it was you stop, you catch the thought, behavior, or emotion, and you change it to one that serves you better. Mm-hmm. And when I went to study mindfulness in UCLA at the Semmel Institute of Neuroscience, I remember talking to one of the teachers who was like, "Ooh, that's a neuroscience technique." And I was like, who knew that I was like making this up myself before like, I came here?
I'm
you
a
know?
Natural.
And what they were saying to me is it's about interrupting neural pathways now. How it looked for me was just desperation. And I think I said this to you on the live the other day, where I literally put my hand up and said, "Stop, stop, stop. It has to stop. This has to stop." Mm-hmm. This terrible mental state of going over and over and over things and worst case scenarios and everything. And, you know, I was a new mom and a single mom, and there was lots going on in the background. And just my mind was like a torture chamber. That's what it felt like all the time.
I have a friend who just said that the other day, and I was like, "You're so accurate." Yes, yeah. My friend Whitney. Yes, and it is. And I've been
Whitney,
quoting that to
I'm
people.
You.
You are. Oh, yeah, I would be fast friends. But yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just put my hand up. And so I used to be people, I'm sure if they were driving by me in the car, would see me all the time go, and that would be stop, catch, change. And it was
like
surprising.
It.
Stop, catch, change. Stop, catch, change.
And you just throw it behind you.
And so when my book came out, I used to get thousands of emails from people saying, "I stop, catch, change smoking. I stop, catch, change binge eating. I stop, catch, change doing this." So I'm like, you can stop, catch, change anything in your life. You interrupt the neural pathway. If you think about it, if you're going into a park, or, you know, you're going for a hike, and you go in and you get the map and you go, and there's three different paths, and most people will take the path that's worn, that most people have gone on. Your brain always wants to take the familiar path, always, always, always. And left unattended, it will just naturally go back on that path. So your job in the beginning is to interrupt that neural pathway and go down the other path. Yes, nobody's really walked down there yet, but trust me, it's okay. It's safe. Because your brain just wants to keep you safe. So it's going to go, "Oh, I don't know about this. Let's just go down this path here. We've been down here like thousands of times. I know you don't like it. It's not serving you. It's bringing a lot of suffering. But we know it, right?
Right.
It's familiar.
We know it.
We know it." So we have to, that's where awareness and presence comes in, to become aware and present enough to recognize when we're about to go down that path again and go, I'm going this way. And over time, when you carve out a new neural pathway, that becomes your new normal. Like when I started these practices, like waking up and writing a gratitude journal or meditating in the morning, I used to get so freaking annoyed at the fact that, why can't I remember to do anything? And so I used to leave post-it notes everywhere. Like that's what I had to do. My friend was like, "Do you remember the day where like you would open the visor in your car and there'd be a post-it note, or you'd open a kitchen cupboard?" Because I remember saying, "I'm going to drink a glass of lemon water every morning." And then I'd be halfway through my morning going, "Oh, I didn't do it again this morning." So I used to leave the lemon water beside my bed with a post-it saying, "Drink me."
Nice.
So when I wake in the morning, I would do it. And they're the kind of things you have to do to get new habits going.
Yeah.
You're not going to automatically lean towards new habits. It's going to take conscious, required effort and consistency.
Yeah, it's taken me like 5 years of building them. And I mean, I had to write them all down.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had the pandemic along the way to, you know, facilitate that, because I was just home with my kid and working from home. And so I could just do my list every day. And now it's like brushing my teeth. It's like second nature.
I mean,
which is all my course.
I would never start my day without a meditation. It's as natural to me as brushing my teeth. For so many years now, I just couldn't even imagine starting my day without doing that. And the very odd time, if I don't have time, I'll take 2 minutes. And then I always do car meditations. I'm known for doing car meditations.
I love it.
So if I pull in somewhere and I'm 3 minutes early, instead of going in 3 minutes early, I'll use that 3 minutes for meditation.
Nice.
Or if I'm early to pick my son up for school, I use that 5 minutes for meditation. If I'm early for a meeting, I use that 4 minutes for meditation. Small moments often create amazing change in your life.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well said.
Yeah.
So many times I think people get a concept of meditation that the, you know, stars have to align, essentially, that you have to have everything right and have your special mat or your pillow and, you know, and like all that, when we really don't. Mine is a super simple process.
Oh, you can meditate anywhere. I used to be I'm the queen of making simple things complicated. Trust me. And I remember years ago I was going on a retreat. I think it was in my 20s. And Rinpoche said to me, "How's your practice?" And it was in front of everyone in the group. And I always used to be intimidated because I used to think these people are real meditators. You know what I mean? Yeah. They've been meditating for years. They're so good at it. One day I'll be like them. And I said, yeah, it's okay. And then I proceeded with a long list of excuses, like super long and lengthy. And this wasn't there and this time or I was busy. And he would say, everything has to stop so Alison can meditate in front of the whole group. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. That's so mean. And I understand what he means now, because in my head, I was like, I have to create the perfect environment with complete silence. And actually, meditation is being able to sit and take a few moments. If you have three or four kids and they're all screaming around you, to bring that into your practice.
That's right.
To see if you can be present with all of that going on around you, because that's how you train yourself to be the calm in the chaos.
Exactly.
Then and only then. But I was fully invested in my victim consciousness then. And I was like, hold on a second. Do you have any idea of how difficult my life is and how busy I am? I mean, come on.
You know? And this was when you were drinking, though, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, this is in my 20s.
So, yeah. Yeah. You had these like opposing forces.
Oh, it was wild. I had two different lives happening. So I would be living in New York, going on weekend retreats upstate New York, peeling thousands of carrots with nuns in the kitchen, and then thinking that that was going to fix me. Now, I had a fix me mentality going, remember? Mm-hmm. So I wasn't the person who had to do stuff. You have to remember that. Other people were going to do it for me. So the doctor, the psychiatrist, the therapist, or the retreat. And that was going to fix me. The missing link was like me, like the work I had to do. So I thought, you know, I'll go away in a 3-day retreat. And let me tell you, you would go in the 3-day silent retreat and you'd feel great coming back Monday and Tuesday. And then Wednesday, go out and start partying again and fall back into old habits. And I'm going, I don't understand. I'm so amazing. I just gave 3 days of my life to go in a retreat. Why am I fixed?
Right? Yeah.
Why is this not working? So for years, I did that. Oh no, actually the book stops at me. I have to continue those changes. It's like I remember doing a Tony Robbins conference years ago, like, I don't know, 15 years ago, and feeling so amazing and pumped and ready. And then it wears off.
Yeah, it does.
It wears off, because it's like what you do when you leave those conferences and when you leave the retreats or after a coaching session or a therapy session, that's when the magic happens.
Yeah.
That's the magic. And so that was a big missing link for me for a long time, is understanding that I'm the only person that can change my life by changing how I'm living every single day. Yeah. So like, you can go to retreats for years and years and years and nothing happened really. Like, so
right.
I'm proof of that.
Well, then you're just doing this kind of, you know.
And I don't mean that nothing's happening. If there's people listening, look, there's a part
of
your
soaking in.
Yeah, there's a part of your soul that keeps drawing you back. I mean, meditation was something that just was drawing me in from a very, very, very early age. And spirit's always saying to me, because, you know, when we talk about plant medicines and everything, which I've never touched, and spirit's always like, you're here to teach people to connect with themselves naturally through meditation. And that's why you've come through your journey, because we can connect. We can find such a deep sense of peace and bliss within by doing these practices. Mm-hmm. And that's the path I'm on, is understanding that I don't have to take something external to me to get high or to get a hit, that I can actually give this to myself by just connecting, going deep within and having these sacred practices. And how many people ever take time for themselves? I mean, silence is the greatest teacher and it's the greatest gift. And it's the one thing that I was terrified of. I never wanted to sit in my own. That's why I partied so much in New York. Because when I was sitting on my own in my apartment at night, it was uncomfortable. So I'd rather be out with random people partying than being by myself. Mm-hmm. So part of the journey is to learn to, you know, if you can sit with yourself and you can spend time with yourself, there's no greater relationship in the world than that. Nobody outside of you can ever give you what you can give you. No one.
Is that God for you? Like the connection?
Yeah, I mean, I have a deep connection to spirit, to source, you know. For me, God is love. You know, it's me like too. I've studied alchemy. It's like understanding what we're creating is creating us back. What we're birthing is birthing us back. We're in a co-creative relationship. And I do commune with spirit every morning. And, you know, my first prayer is from A Course in Miracles, when I say, how can I serve, is where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me saying to whom? And I do ask spirit. It's like we were talking about something earlier, and I'm like, if this is not for me, remove it from my path mm-hmm. now. And you can, like, I'm a great believer in having that relationship with spirit. You know, some people can call it your higher self, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
But I know that the deeper I go into that relationship, the more finely tuned I am at my intuition, and the guidance comes really clearly and really quickly.
Yes.
Like, you can literally command your life into being. Like, if I say, if this is for me, increase my passion for it. If it is not, let it go.
Yeah.
And I will get a very clear sign, let it go, or it'll just be removed.
Yeah.
Very quickly. I mean, that's taken years of practice, but I'm a great believer in that we're creating everything. We're creating absolutely 100% of our experiences. And that's really helped me on my journey. And I know not everybody agrees with that, because what helped me remove myself from my own victim identity was to stop asking myself the question, why is this happening to me? I had to, because it just spiraled me back into a victim consciousness. And instead now I ask, why am I creating this? Why am I creating this? And that doesn't mean that we're victim blaming or shaming or pointing fingers. People get into stories about it. If I'm like, why am I creating it? It means everything I create, good, bad, and indifferent, is for my growth. So if I have created someone to come into my life that maybe I would rather not be experiencing time with, I'm like, okay, I obviously created it for a reason, because we're going to keep creating experiences until we learn the lesson, mm-hmm. right? We're just going to keep creating the same person in a different form until we actually get that lesson. And so now my intention is, I want to learn the lesson quicker, especially if it's something I'd rather not be experiencing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, if there's a lesson in this for me, if it's for my growth, I'm here, I'm listening. Mm-hmm. And if I'm missing the signs, make it bigger. And so I constantly talk to spirit in that way, constantly. And just surrender and open your heart, like connecting with my heart. I realized my heart was closed for so long, mm-hmm. for so long. And opening my heart was one of the most difficult things to do, because when we start working with the heart, vulnerability is a quality that usually emerges first. And that's when most people shut down. Because mm-hmm. it's almost like being asked to walk down the street naked.
Yeah,
that's
it
what
is.
It's like.
Yeah.
It's like you're asking me to literally take off my clothes and go into a football stadium. Like, you know, like opening your heart. And for me, it was like, ooh, can I be vulnerable? Can I let people really see who I am? You know, am I going to be enough? Are they going to like me? That was really hard for me, just to stop wearing 50,000 different masks. And I certainly don't have it all figured out. And there's days where I'm like, I connect with my heart and I feel sadness and I try to open my heart. And my heart is my greatest teacher, because, you know, when I feel my heart closing down, it's my invitation to go inwards and go, what's really going on here? What's mm-hmm. really happening in this moment? And so that has been so powerful for me, because I've been able to do so much healing through just deeply connecting with that part of myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we can heal deeply without bringing the heart in.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
No, it's not. I don't think so.
You know?
And really loving. Mm-hmm. And really loving ourselves unconditionally, which is a tall order sometimes. I mean, can you look back on your unsobriety and love it?
Yeah, now I can. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's where we find real, like, acceptance, I think, and this gratitude for, like, oh, yeah, okay. I love all that. I had to go through that. I'm, you know, okay.
And sometimes I look back in photographs and it's like, yeah, love her for where she was at the moment. And mm-hmm. that's the only way I knew how to cope.
Yeah.
During that time.
You were just doing your best at mm-hmm. the time. I mean, like, that gives me a lot of compassion, not only toward myself, but toward other people too. When I'm just able to say, like, maybe everybody's doing their best at the moment, you know?
I had a beautiful mentor who used to say to me, do the best with what you have from where you are.
Yeah.
Just, that's it. Mm-hmm. In this moment.
Yeah.
And it kind of frees you up then from all the pressure
that
we put on ourselves.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean you're perfect. It just means, like, when you're not, you're a little quicker maybe to be like, okay, maybe I can make that better, you know, next time or this time, or apologize, whatever I need to do. Be kind to myself. I don't know.
In the moment.
In the moment,
in
yes.
In the moment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I love that.
Well, as we're wrapping up, is there anything that we missed that we really need to touch on before we go?
I don't think so. I think we've talked about a lot of stuff.
Have we? Let me just check. Like, I think in closing, maybe I'll ask you, you know, do limiting beliefs still come back up for you? And I think you kind of covered that, though, about how you return to, I mean, you have these really great, very simple practices that you've honed. So I feel like we kind of covered that, but I don't know. Just anything maybe you want to reiterate or that's on your heart right now?
Yeah, I think for people listening who, you know, I used to, like I said, and I touched on this, let go of perfection, let go of destination, let go of there being somewhere to get to and something you're going to become, because we're constantly in a state of becoming. And that is the path. That is the path. Mm-hmm. There is nowhere to get to. And if we can keep reminding ourselves of that, like, until you have no breath in your body, you're on a journey of expansion and growth. Our soul is constantly seeking expansion or growth. Whether you're 8 or 88, your soul is seeking to experience more of life through you. And so really surrendering to that journey, and then that requires us to let go of age, limits we have in ourselves. You know, I often hear moms going, well, I'm a mom now, so I can't do this. And we touched on this the other day in the live. Like, age is but a number. My alchemy teacher always says to me, when somebody says to her, how old are you? She says, ageless.
Ooh.
Because she's like, it's just a number. Like, in alchemy, what you believe that, you know, you are ageless, all your timelines are happening at once. You know, how powerful we are that we create through story. For me, yes, limiting beliefs do come up, but I get curious about them now. I'm like, what's really going on under that? Or what wound is really coming up? Mm-hmm. You know, is it the fear of being abandoned? Is it the fear of being loved? Is it the fear of being seen? And I go in and I reparent that little girl. And I offer her compassion and kindness and presence. And my greatest learning in this last year, I had a few days that were not nice and dark. And I remember ringing my mentor and I just said, I don't understand. I'm doing all this work. And, you know, there was that voice that came up in me that went, why am I experiencing 3 days of darkness? And there was one of them that I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And I was getting so angry at myself, at the world, at everything, because I was like, but I do all this work. And I was listing it all off in my head. Mm-hmm. And it was like, so what's it all for? And she was so freaking patient with me throughout it. And she just said to me, for the first time in your life, can you turn towards that part of yourself and love it fully? And it was the first time I turned towards that part of myself and realized how freaking terrified I was of that part of me. And I really need people to hear that part of me, because it is a part of me. And when I turned towards it and loved it, like really turned towards it and loved it, through the fear, through the terror, it was like it started to dissolve. It was one of the most powerful things I've ever done in my entire life. And it's like, it's a part of you that's trying to protect you, that has been keeping you freaking safe since your childhood. And so learning to integrate the parts of me that have scared me, that I've tried to run from, the really sad part, the part that's telling me, check out, you don't want to be here anymore. Yeah. And learning to presence that instead of suppressing it and repressing it has brought me unimaginable freedom.
Freedom.
Unimaginable freedom. Mm. Because it doesn't scare me anymore. It's like, it doesn't get to, it's like having the fear without the fear having us.
Ooh, I love it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it just doesn't get that power. Mm-hmm. And so reclaiming my power and stepping into my power. And power to me is not shouty or screamy or, you know, CEO of companies. That's not power to me. Power is being able to very quietly sit or stand and just with this knowing, this is who I am. This is where I'm going. And I feel perfectly content and peaceful right here, right now. That's power. There is no greater power than that. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Seems like a perfect spot to end on. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful that you were here. And if people want to download that journal, or find you. I know that you're at Allison Canavan Wellness on Instagram, and you've got a link in bio there, and then AllisonCanavan.com, and that's A-L-I-S-O-N, and those links will be in the show notes. Is that pretty much it? Cover everything?
And you can download everything on my website, affirmations, journal, everything,
Awesome. Thank you. Oh, I love this. I feel like I already need to listen back to it, you know, like just even what you were saying about power and stuff. I mean, those are things I've been implementing just lately, just around money particularly, but just around who I want to be. And I've been just playing with it in some different ways. I have a vision of my highest self. And then sometimes I just think like, well, if I am, why not just be that right now? Like, she's enthusiastic about everything she's doing because she knows it's making a difference, and she knows, you know, and sometimes you can just like think you're not there yet to feel that way. And so that's, I've been opening up to that, and suddenly I'm like having things happen that are surprising me. Like, and when I say suddenly, like literally like in the last 24 hours, like even just like that suitcase that showed up today, you know? And, so it's really interesting to just go ahead and open it up and expand and feel that freedom like now.
And it's another way of saying let love in, because that's all love. Let love in. So many people block love. Let it in.
Yeah.
Because so many, the one thing that most people fear is love. The most powerful, powerful teacher in the entire world is the one thing most people fear.
Yeah.
Because you have to open your heart and you have to be fully, fully vulnerable to really experience love.
Yeah, you really do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's scary. It's scary. And I'm on, listen, I am really on that journey. Like, you know, we could probably come back in a year and talk about this, because I am really just entering into that right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's, okay. It's a like, date.
It's the next part of my journey. You're 9 years. I can really feel it.
Great. Complete this 8 year and see what happens. So actually, no, you've already completed 8 years. So this will be completing your ninth then. So, well, thank you so much.
I'm so grateful.
And everyone that's here, I know you just got so much out of this as I did. And I can't wait to listen back. And so follow Allison. And thank you so much for being here and showing up for yourself. And I mean, what kind of a world would it be? Well, who would we be if we really put all that into practice? I mean, we would feel good. Imagine that. That's what we're going for, right? Love, feeling good. I mean, that's what we want. So don't hold ourselves back, right? That's what we're doing on this show too. Always learning ways to become our best selves. So thank you so much for being here. Of course, you can find me everywhere. You can sign up for the newsletter and all that. AmyEdwards.info has literally everything. So go there, courses, everything. And of course, a link to all the show notes and everything will be in there as well. So thank you so much for showing up today for yourself. Thank you to our guest, Allison Canavan. And I love you so much. Here's to no limit to how much we can transform and just keep opening up to love. There's always a little more, right? Limitless. I love you. Till next time.
This has been the Amy Edwards Show from Overcome Studios. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And thank you so much for being here. Sign up for our newsletter at AmyEdwards.com.